You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Travis Rogers and John Ireland here on ESPN 710. And John, you and I were across the street. We were having dinner with our colleagues tonight when the news broke not long ago about the death of Vin Scully, as you just heard, 94 years old, 67 years as the voice of the Dodgers. And this is, it's extraordinary life. It's an extraordinary career. And it was somebody that has narrated our, you know, my entire life, every summer, every Dodger game that I've ever heard. And just an incredibly sad news that he has passed at 94 years old.
Probably the most iconic broadcaster in Los Angeles history. And I'm not just talking about sports, Travis. I think that Vin Scully, as you articulated, was the soundtrack for all of us in Los Angeles for as long as any of us can remember.
Yeah.
This was a guy who started with the Dodgers in the 1950s.
In Brooklyn.
Moved here when they moved here. And until just a few years ago was basically everything we knew about the Dodgers came from Vin. And we're going to open the phones here. 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-3776. My dad used to tell me, Travis, that Vin Scully was the best storyteller that was out there. It wasn't just him describing baseball. You learn something every time you listen to Vin. And this isn't a shock. He was 94.
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed almost unstoppable.
Well,
I really thought he was going to live to be 100.
I wouldn't have been surprised either. It was, you were listening to a man in his early 80s, and then his mid 80s, and then his late 80s, and he still sounded like he was somebody in his 30s and 40s who was at the peak of his powers. And, you know, it's funny when you're talking about what your dad said, that he was the greatest storyteller of all time, and I'm certainly not going to argue with that. I don't know if there's anybody that's done anything that has been better at whatever it is, whether it's medicine or art or broadcasting or school teaching or whatever it is, that was better at their chosen line of work than he was at his. That he was at the pinnacle of what he does. And we're spoiled because you and I both grew up in Southern California. We grew up in Los Angeles. We got to listen to him for our entire lives. But this was not just an L.A. thing. It's more of an L.A. thing than it is everywhere else. But this is somebody that you heard on the Masters. This is somebody that you heard on NFL football. This is somebody that you heard.
Right. Called Dwight Clark's catch.
Absolutely. He was the voice of the catch in the back of the end zone. This is somebody that everybody knew. You know, when you're growing up out here, you hear about Vin Scully, you listen to Vin Scully, you just think that everybody has their version of this. Nobody had their version of this. There was only one Vin Scully.
Clinton Yates is here. Beto Duran's here. As Travis mentioned, we were all having a staff dinner tonight when I got a text from my wife about 20 minutes ago that Vin had passed. And word is spreading fast. Beto, I'll start with you. You grew up in Southern California. One of my favorite things that I get to tell people is that I actually got to talk to Vin Scully and say hi to him, and you saw him more than I did.
Yeah, so for many years I was the beat reporter here at ESPN LA, and you go into the Vin Scully press box at Dodger Stadium. And one of the coolest things that I always tell people is I never had a conversation with Vin because I was so scared to actually have that conversation.
Sure.
But he always had the conversation with you. Because I would get there for a 7 o'clock game, like at 3 o'clock, and he'd walk in with his wife, and he'd always come by and say, hello, how are you doing? And, you know, I'd have my body facing the field, and he'd walk behind me, and it was like 3-4 of us, maybe, the beat writers, and just like, I want to say, hey, Vin, how's your day going? And it was just that nod of like, yeah. And the nicest man, super nice. But what I always tell people the story about Vin that's cool for me is when the national anthem would happen, he'd always leave his booth, and he would walk out from his booth to where Nancy B. Heathley was at. And
the organist.
Mm-hmm. The organist, yeah. And he would hum the national anthem. And one day I finally did ask, why do you hum? He said, because that's me relaxing my vocal cords. Humming the national anthem was him relaxing his vocal cords from the walk from his booth to Nancy B and back. That was the time that he had for himself. He said, because after once the game starts, I'm never leaving my booth. And you're right. He never left to go to the bathroom. He never did anything. And just little details like that were just so cool for me. Of all the things I've done in my career, I wasn't around for Chick, but it just being in that area around Vin, it's just so cool.
To kind of lend some light on how good Vin was, Clinton Yates is here. Clinton, you did not grow up in Los Angeles, but you knew who Vin Scully was because he kind of transcended his regionalism. When he went to the network, everybody kind of got to know what we already knew, and that's when you got him.
If there was such a thing as encyclopedia still, Travis, and you looked up play-by-play broadcaster, you'd have a picture of Vin Scully.
Sure.
That was the whole thing. And you pointed out one of the things at Dodger Stadium that to me is most impressionant is that floor where the Vin Scully media room is. You get the history. You get the trunks going back to Brooklyn. We're talking about things that are far larger than Los Angeles. My man was in New York City when the Dodgers were there. Think about that. You don't get a chance.
Clinton, he started his first year with the Dodgers was 1950, before anybody in this room was born.
You don't get a chance to see people who have plain seen that many things. Never mind, did it for that long. And that is what the breadth of the storytelling really showed a lot of, Travis. This dude was everywhere, and he had been there from the jump. You knew that about him. You knew that about his history. And you knew that about how much he cared about what he was talking about.
You know, it's interesting because there are guys that do things for a long time that you hear a long time, you see for a long time, you see them on TV, you see them, you know, listen to them on the radio, whatever it might be. They're around a long time. You don't feel like you know them. You felt like you had an intimate relationship with this person. And I think part of it was is that, you know, especially on the radio and later on when every game was on television, it was just him. He was by himself, and he was talking.
He was better by himself than he would have been with anyone else.
But he was talking to you. He was talking to you, Beto. He was talking to you, Clinton. He was talking to me, and it wasn't this sense that you know he was describing it to everybody else. He felt like he was just describing it to you, and he had this incredible intimacy to go along with this very big intellect and this unbelievable gift on how to describe things along the way. But you know, Beto, I loved your story because I've been doing this for a long time. I never met him. I never had the chance to introduce myself, to go up and say, you know, to tell him what we're talking about right now, how much he meant to me listening to Dodger games, how much I realized, ooh, that's a thing that you can do in this world. And I still feel like I know the man because I listened to him for 40-plus years. And my dad listened to him his entire life. It's this unbelievable run and an intimate thing, even with people that never got a chance to meet him, that he was able to connect with
people
like that.
You know, we never heard the same story twice.
I know.
And even if we did, it was in different variations. It never felt like it was the same story. And right now on Spectrum Sportsnet, they have Vin Scully 1927 to 2022 on the game. And, you know, SportsCenter has broken into it, and everybody's talking about it on Twitter. This is awesome what we're doing right now, is having the show for the fans to be able to go. And, you know, you may have never met him, but he was your family.
The guy has first a tagline for a play-by-play baseball broadcast.
Everybody
that
impersonates him.
Unbelievable.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
On a basic level. I remember when I came out here, when I first met Greg Bergman, as a matter of fact, and I was at Dodger Stadium, and I posted a post that said, it's time for Dodger. And I had Nats fans on me. I said, here's what you're not going to do.
Right.
You're not going to disrespect Vin Scully and his tagline. And I only say that because that is a rarity, as you said, John, in the culture of broadcasting entirely, never mind sports alone.
Greg Bergman, who produces my show, Mason in Ireland. Greg, I don't think you'll be mad at me revealing this. You've mentioned on the air before. You actually have a Vin Scully tattoo. He was that much a part of your upbringing. You knew this was coming. He's 94. What are you feeling tonight?
I am incredibly sad right now. We've talked about it on the air before that I don't cry, and this is the closest that I've been to actually crying for anything since Kobe passed away just a couple years ago. This is a very emotional thing for me. He created my Dodger fandom. Without him, I would not become a Dodger fan because he pulled you into everything that he did. And now to hear all this, it's incredibly, incredibly sad. The one memory that I'm going to have of him, and it's not the best one for me, it's when you guys had him on the air one time and we were recording him. And I went to go pick up the phone to go talk to him and say, hey, thanks very much for coming on to Mason Ireland. And somehow I hung up on him. So my closest memory to being around him was hanging up on a legend. And
he probably apologized to you, Greg.
If I would have called him back, he would have.
I must have done something wrong, Greg. You know, I apologize. Let me call you back.
Over the years, we had him on, I think, only three times. And all three times, it was never to talk about him. It was one time Bob Miller had finally won the Stanley Cup. Bob had been a broadcaster thing, and I reached out. Brad Zager, who's now the head of Fox Sports. Brad is in charge of all of Fox Sports. Used to be Vin's producer, and I reached out to Brad and I said, "Hey, do you think he would come on to surprise Bob?" And Brad, he goes, "That's something he would probably do." If it's not about him, he's not going to talk about himself. But let's and we literally had Bob in studio celebrating the Stanley Cup. I go, we got a surprise caller on line one. And he goes, well, I can't wait to congratulate my friend Bob. And Bob was blown away.
Nice.
He couldn't believe it. There, 877-710-ESPN, if you want to react to the death of Vin Scully, which, again, we're not – he was 94 years old. This was a day we all knew was coming. We certainly didn't know it was coming tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Steven in Hollywood. Hey, Steven, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hi, guys. Sad, sad day. I just wanted to make this real quick. And just the one thing that everything you guys touched on is just his voice, the etiquette he brought. But I implore everyone to go listen to how Vin broadcasted and narrated the benches clearing situations that the Dodgers had. He brought a benches clearing situation to a formality and a calm demeanor that kind of made you feel a little bit at ease about, okay, this is not going to be such a big problem, but it's going to be more or less of a thing just explaining to me how these people are going to be interacting with each other and who's going to be. Like, it wasn't so much of a brawl anymore. It was more of just like okay, let's break this down and dissect it. And the way he did that with his diction was unbelievable. And I just had to say that. I implore everyone to go listen to his calm demeanor on those situations.
Well, Steven, that's a great call, and thank you for calling.
It's extraordinary because he's talking about a brawl that he narrates, right?
Right.
And we all there's so many famous calls, and we're going to play some of them for you coming up here in just a little bit. It was the benign moments that were extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's when it wasn't Kirk Gibson hitting a home run or Sandy Koufax throwing in a perfect game. It was when he's just talking about some guy who did this thing in college or grew up in this place. And, you know, we could all tell the story, and it would be something that you may or may not remember. But he's able to tell these stories about the most benign things, and they were extraordinarily
compelling. Well, when he would talk
compelling.
About the little kids in the crowd, right? Oh, look at that baby right there, like a toddler in the crowd, or when he would, how many of us have not wanted a Farmer John hot dog
because of Easternmost in quality, Westernmost in flavor?
See, right there, you know
there
the tagline.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Those little mundane things. I don't know how many games that I watched at Olympic Stadium with the Expos in August, where he would hand it off to Don Drysdale in the 80s, because that's what I would watch.
Don Drysdale,
yeah, because it would be Vin to Don Drysdale on TV. Working by themselves. Like, people talk about Jerry Doggett. I don't remember Jerry Doggett.
I remember Jerry Doggett, Ross Porter, Don Drysdale. Yeah.
It was these games, because I remember in August, for some reason, the 4 o'clock games, they were on Channel 11 here in L.A. And at home, you know, there's a bunch of kids. You can't watch everything. 4 o'clock games? My dad wasn't home yet. We could still watch it. All right, cool. It would be all the games with the AstroTurf with Olympic Stadium. And that's all, like, Gary Carter, like, all those Expos teams. The Pirates and then the Phillies, and it was just the turf fields of how, and he'd always talk about the weather, and it's like, that's how I learned humidity from Bill Scully.
Right. The man saw Jackie Robinson play. You know what I'm saying? Like,
he ice skated with Jackie Robinson.
It's so funny. One of the all-time great stories is him talking about racing Jackie Robinson.
Yes,
I just came back from the Jackie Robinson Museum
in New York. Vin's in that museum. I'm like, this is amazing.
Clinton, Vin could skate. He grew up in New York, went to Fordham. Jackie grew up in Pasadena and didn't know how to skate. Somebody found him a pair of skates, and Jackie said to Vin, I'll race you. And that's what that great picture is that you're talking about in the thing.
Right.
Trav, I to let you know, what an impact Vin Scully had on everybody. Mm-hmm. This is a call that everybody remembers. This is game one, 1988 World Series, last play of the game.
So the Dodgers are down to their last out, game one of the World Series. And look who's coming up. Kirk Gibson with two bad legs. You talk about a roll of the dice. This is it.
With 1988. So we're talking 44 years ago.
I'm 41 years old.
And the hair on my arm is standing on its end. Yeah.
Well, you heard
and it's because of the call as much as it is because of the home run.
Well, you heard the simplicity of everything he worked into that call. Gibson coming up with two bad legs.
Two bad legs.
This is the roll of the dice. She's gone. And by the way, Beto, this
she
is
she is gone.
Yeah, this is something you talked about. You know what he did after he said that? He walked to the back of the room. He poured himself a cup of coffee and let the crowd react. And then he said this. He goes, in a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened. And when I had to call the Lakers championship in the bubble, I had no idea what I was going to say. But I had heard that call earlier in the week, the one you just played. And what came out of my mouth, and I give Vin full credit for this, and I think he has made an impression on every young sportscaster in the country in some one way or another, and this is how he did it to me. I said, it was, you know, it was the end of COVID. Everybody was locked down. We were all quarantined. And I just, what came out of my mouth was, in a year almost all of us wanted to forget, the Lakers give us something to remember forever. Mm. That's basically plagiarism. Okay. I didn't know it.
Good.
Yeah, it's good plagiarism.
I didn't know it but at the time, but he was just so great.
Well,
at telling stories. Here's another thing that I thought about that you guys all appreciate. So in 2015, he was given the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Obama. Yeah. And one of the people that was also given the Presidential Medal of Freedom that day was Bruce Springsteen. And the great John Suhu, who's the Dodger photographer, has been forever. Beto, you and
I've known
John for years, was at the White House and took a picture, and he tweeted it out. He said, "The boss with Bruce Springsteen." A picture of Ben and Bruce.
You could give guys a million years to come up with something that he can find in the moment, and that is perhaps the greatest gift that he had of all, and he had a whole bunch of them. I mean, it wasn't just the voice. It wasn't just the ability to tell stories, to find the perfect turn of phrase. It was all of these things. Let's take a very quick break. Let's come back. Let's take some more of your phone calls. 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. We're celebrating the life of Vin Scully, who died today at 94 years old on 710-ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's that call, John, that you were talking about. Just a perfect moment for a perfect moment. It was the call for the home run by the perfect guy. And it's terribly, terribly sad. Like you mentioned, 94 years old, an incredible run. I think it's a run that any of us would have loved to have had, but it doesn't make it any less sad. Vin Scully died earlier tonight, 94 years old, 67 years as the voice of the Dodgers.
And Beto, he worked until he was almost 90. I think he worked till he was 89.
And he could have kept going if he wanted to.
Oh, sure.
Remember everybody kept saying, oh, we want you to do the playoffs. Or do the All-Star. He's like, no, my time has passed. Ever the gentleman about it and just keep going. When I hear that call, the 88 World Series, I was 10 years old. I remember jumping up and down, right? I didn't know until years.
By the way, that call was on TV. Yeah. He was doing that game for NBC
on
television. I didn't know
until years later. Everybody was like, oh, Joe Buck this, Joe Buck that. I didn't know that there was a radio call.
Jack Buck. His dad was the call. Yeah.
So I didn't know that there was a TV. I'm 10 years old. I don't know the difference. And then I get into the business. I'm like, oh, I was like, what did Jack Buck do at the World Series? I'm like, because I just thought Vin did everything because that's what he did.
You're not wrong, Beto. How about this? He called 25 World Series.
Wow.
He called 20 no-hitters.
Wow.
He called 12 All-Star games, and that's just kind of a very short rundown of his baseball resume. He called NFL football. He called PGA Tour golf. He did college football. He was the voice of everything that you could
think
of.
Because the first time I ever watched golf, I'm like, wait, that's the Dodger guy.
That's the Dodger guy.
So I'm 43, going to be 44. So I remember this is what the Dodger, he would be on Channel 11. And then on Saturdays, he would be on Channel 4 with Joe Garagiola. Mm-hmm. Or I think sometimes Jim Cott. Mm-hmm. Right? I didn't quite get it. I'm like, wait a minute. How come the Dodger guy is on? He's doing national games. I'm a little kid. I didn't know that world of what he's going on. But then, wait, Sunday, he's doing golf.
Like, yeah.
Trav, you pointed out that he not only did golf, he did football. And, Greg, one of the most famous football plays in history. You know, we look at the Niners now as a team that had Joe Montana, right? You know, that dominated the 80s. But it all started when they finally knocked off the Cowboys. They couldn't get past the Cowboys. And there's something in San Francisco called the catch where Montana found Dwight Clark. Vin Scully was doing that football game on TV. Here's what it sounded like.
Looking, throwing in the end zone.
He also, Trav, called some of baseball's greatest moments that weren't necessarily Dodger highlights. For example, Don Larsen, remember, Vin started in 1950, threw a perfect game in 1955. You want to hear what young Vin sounded like? This is it.
Heartbreakingly close to pitching a no-hitter and didn't do it. But no man has ever pitched a perfect game in a World Series. Only one perfect game has ever been pitched, but that was in the course of the regular season. But when you put it in a World Series, you've set the biggest diamond in the biggest ring. And so hats off to Don Larsen. No runs, no hits, no errors, no walks, no base runners. The final score, the Yankees 2 runs, 5 hits, and no errors. The Dodgers no runs, no hits, no errors, in fact, nothing at all.
There are so many things that are extraordinary. Number one, like you mentioned, that is young Vin Scully. He is a young man at that point.
5 years, he's in his 20s.
It sounds exactly, the voice is slightly different, and the audio quality is what it is from the time, but that's Vin Scully. Like, it wasn't terribly different.
Did you guys know that prior to Larsen's perfect game, there had only been one perfect game?
This is it. So I think there's only been like 12 or 13 ever.
Right.
But when that one, that's how long has there been that one person had done it?
How do you have that nugget now? Like, right now we have everything on the internet. We have everything we figured out. He went, that's how prepared he was for that. I remember in college, I had to do a Vin Scully paper because once I got into journalism, I'm like, okay, I did a paper on Howard Cosell, and I did one on Vin. You remember? You know what his first broadcast ever was?
Was it Fordham football or something like that?
Red Barber found him at Fordham,
okay.
And he did Boston College, Maryland at Fenway on the roof.
On the roof, that's right.
Yeah, and he went up there because the regular broadcaster called in sick, so Vin went up there at 45 degrees. It was in 1949, and from there, that's where he got his tape, and Red picked him out to go and eventually become one of the Dodgers.
What did John Wooden used to say? Success is when luck meets opportunity.
Yep, yeah, luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah. To put something in perspective, when Hank Aaron passed Babe Ruth, it was not necessarily something that everyone was excited about. The country was pretty racially divided. Hank Aaron put up with a lot of racism, but he was an unbelievable player. You can make the argument Hank Aaron's the greatest baseball player ever. And Vin happened to be on the mic in Atlanta when he hit 715, because he did it against the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Al Downing was pitching for the Dodgers. And the way Vin works this in, talks about the race element without really making it the focus, is pretty stunning. Here's Vin Scully calling Hank Aaron's 715th home run.
Aaron waiting, the outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. Marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep south for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol.
And by the way,
wow, I never heard
there,
of that part.
There aren't a lot of guys that could have pulled that off. There aren't a lot of
guys. He said that on TV?
He did.
Yeah.
And you could not have pulled that off and had it sound as seamless as he did. Now you would be accused of politics and everything else. And it was just, again, it was the perfect call at the perfect time.
Here's Drew in Sacramento. Hey, Drew, you're on ESPN LA. Hi, Drew.
Hey, John. Hey, Beto. It's been a long day, obviously. I'm here in Sacramento for a work trip, but just came from a Rivercats game, the Giants affiliate. Feel like I just committed adultery and I just heard the news and had to I know I'm a sucker, man. I just bought a Rivercats hat and everything like an idiot, but just heard the news and had to tell my dad, who's a huge Dodger fan. Probably the biggest thing we've ever bonded about in our lives is the Dodgers and Vin Scully, and breaking the news to him kind of sucked. He just moved to Missouri. He's been going to a ton of Dodger games before preparing for that. And just, I don't know, it's breaking the news to him, suck, man. And
it does, Drew.
Guys,
thanks for the call.
I'm outside of the state's capital right now, just trying to look for any kind of inspiration right now, man.
All right, thanks for the call, Drew. It is, I'm watching, Beto, I know you're doing it too. Twitter has, you talk about a Twitter takeover.
Oh, my gosh.
Every tweet.
But it's really cool.
Is about Vin Scully. The people I follow who are from football, who are from the NBA.
That's it, though. It had nothing to – I mean, he obviously is most well-known for baseball, but he was not just a baseball person. He was not just a Dodger person. He was not just a guy that was an L.A. person. He was
– Everybody knows
everybody
him.
Knows
One
him.
Of the few broadcasters that nobody complains about.
Well, I was going to say, think about this.
And if
I
you
don't
did,
care,
you had a problem.
Think about this. He did it for nearly 80 years – or, excuse me, 70 years, 67 years. Have you ever in your life heard someone say something negative about him? And even mildly negative? Never. It's to go 7 decades and not have somebody go, you know, I just don't like it all. Vince, never said out loud.
Clint just sent me a tweet right now that said, Vin Scully was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
He worked for another 40 years.
After he got in.
Yeah.
You know, after he got in. Steve Vilbeck, who's been a writer in Los Angeles for a long time, has written a column for the LA Times, and the headline says, Vin Scully will never understand how deeply he's touched us. I think Vin did understand that he had a unique connection to the city, but I don't think that he ever fully realized the magnitude of it. I think
too humble to really embrace that. Like his last game at Dodger Stadium.
It was so simple, and it was so clean and just memorable, but it wasn't extravagant. It wasn't – I mean, they obviously treated it with a great deal of respect, but it wasn't this, we're shutting everything down, we're making it – it was – he had a little moment before the game, and then he called the game, and then at the end of the game, good night.
You know, one of the cool things that I noticed as I progressed being around the game, and Jose Mota, a mentor of mine, showed me for years, he said, watch what happens at 4 o'clock. Like, Jose, what do you mean? He's like – This is when you really know things. Vince Scully would always have dinner with the scouts. So whenever he was telling a story about a player, like, how does Vin know about this Venezuelan kid or this Dominican kid? Because he was having dinner with the old school scouts, the guys who had a dip, who had the stopwatch, who had the legal pad, and he would have dinner with them, and then he would go and talk to somebody else, and he was always working the Vin Scully press room, talking to somebody, which he could have easily just been there like, hey, come kiss my ring.
It never felt like he was not working. It felt like he had done exactly what you said every night. And look, baseball, it's 162 games, right? There are going to be some nights where you probably feel like, look, they're playing the Pirates tonight. I can tell the stories I told the night before. Never. It always felt like he had a new story to tell about a new guy from a new place. It never felt like it was
rehashed. And
I would
watch from a distance because I would do my last radio report at like 6:40, and then I had nothing else to do. I could have gone and done something. I would just sit in the press box and by the ice cream machine, by the way, because that was the best angle for where Vin would be at, because he would be in the back. Because him and Vinny and Tommy and Jaime Jarrín had a special back room. So I'd kind of just observe from a distance to just see what's going on, and you would see him talking to different people. And one of the cool things, John, I know you'd appreciate this, there was a time where Dick Enberg was doing the Padres at the end of his career. Harry Callis was doing the Phillies at the end of his career. And you could hear those voices, and we all became little kids of like, wait a minute, that's Harry Callis from NFL Films? That's Dick Enberg right there? And it was just a conversation that they would come out, and you're like, this is cool. I just to be in a fly on the wall.
All right, we're going to take some more of your phone calls. I know people want to talk about
their
memories.
Yeah, a lot of people on hold. We'll get to you next.
Their experiences with Vin Scully. 877-710-ESPN. If you want to get in, go ahead and give us a call. We're celebrating the life of Vin Scully, who died earlier tonight at 94 years old. We're back in a couple of minutes right here on 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There's almost some poetry in the moment to realize the former Dodger, the good friend of Fernando as a teammate, and it is Pedro Guerrero hitting 294 with the opportunity now to break up the no-hitter. Guerrero hit a looping fly ball to shallow left, dropped by Gibson for an error, fly to center and walked after that. And there goes McGee, and the pitch is hit foul outside of third and down the line, 0-1. So McGee going on the pitch, Fernando intent on getting Guerrero, because McGee, with all of his talent, can't steal a no-hitter from first base. McGee has stolen 21 out of 25 with the Cardinals down 6-0. It's not that McGee wants to steal, but the Dodgers don't want to hold him on. Murray is well off the bag, and so McGee figures, if you're going to give it to me, we'll get it and take it. The strike one pitch to Pedro Guerrero. Swung on and missed. And the crowd now, with more emotion following every pitch. There was a short chant, Pedro, Pedro, as they did in Boston in the 86 World Series to try and taunt Strawberry. And now they're doing it to Guerrero, hoping to distract him, hoping to upset him, hoping perhaps to make him try too hard. Fernando ready in the strike two pitch, is hit back to the box, dribbling to second. Samwell on the bag, throws to first, double play. Fernando Valenzuela has pitched a no-hitter at 10:17 in the evening of June the 29th, 1990. If you have a sombrero, Throw it to the sky.
How good is that? I mean, come on.
It's perfect. You could, if you're writing a movie, it wouldn't be better than that. It was perfect. And that, like, he said so many things. Every time I listen to these, it kind of brings tears to my eyes all over again. That, you know, the, you know, if you have a sombrero, throw it to the sky, you know it's coming. It still sounds amazing over and over again. But you know what kind of jumped out at me this time, guys? Was the Willie McGee can't steal a no-hitter from first base. What
right.
a wonder, what a perfect thing to say. That it explains everything that's taken place right there, and that
he's
thing
describing
mean
the chance and the crowd and the, I mean, just the best ever. I just got a text from Beto. I can't remember if did you read this Adam Amin text?
Yeah, Adam Amin from Clinton Yates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is he writes, he's our Mozart, our Picasso, our Da Vinci for those of us who try and do the job of play-by-play at the highest level, in particular baseball. He's right. They're just, I often say, Trav, that I grew up going to sportscaster school, and yeah. I didn't even know it.
Yep.
I had Vin Scully doing the Dodgers, Dick Enberg doing the Angels, Chick Hearn doing the Lakers, and Bob Miller doing the Kings.
Yep.
No wonder I became a sportscaster. all right, every line jammed.
You know, before we take a call, and we're going to take a bunch of these, it was funny listening to that no-hitter. Have you guys ever had the good fortune to be in the ballpark when a no-hitter was thrown?
Once.
No,
me too.
Never.
I was there one time. I saw Atlanta Braves left-hander Kent Merker threw a no-hitter against the Dodgers one night. I happened to go to the game. And it was exciting, and it was fun, and I'll remember it for the rest of my life. But listening to him describe what's happening in those moments, it wasn't like sitting there screaming. It's better listening to him set it up and kind of lay the whole thing out rather than standing in the ballpark screaming.
And the way that he set that up, the Fernando one, it's iconic. But hearing Fernando being able to say Sonora, Mexico over the years. I mean, you guys don't understand how big of a deal it is. You know, we have Jaime Jarrín, legend in his own, Hall of Famer. But to hear Vin Scully say the proper names and the accent the proper way in Spanish, you don't understand how big of a deal that is for the Latino community here in L.A. For Vin to try his best and to go and say that. It's not Pedro Guerrero, it's Pedro Guerrero. Like the way he would say, how many times did we all say San Pedro de Macorís? Because we don't know where it's at.
Because he said it.
Exactly.
Yeah, he said it. That's where all the shortstops come from.
Exactly. That little detail right there, Vin respecting Latino culture, that's also huge for us.
All right, let's get some of these calls going. Here's Jason in Indianapolis. Hey, Jason, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Born and raised in L.A. I moved to college at the Naval Academy 21 years ago, and just been deployed all over the world, and you know, Dodger baseball is home, and so whether it's staying up till 1 a.m. on an app, you know, we've been blessed with technology, but just listening to the Dodgers all these years, I mean, it reminds you of home. It reminds you of, you know, your mom pulling you out of school on opening day, of him describing, you know, Nomo mania. I mean, everything that I grew up, I mean, even tonight I'm talking to people I haven't talked to in 5 years, and we're all just crying all over the world, all over the country, and it's just, you know, he unifies L.A., and when we won in 2020, you know, first thought, thank God. Second thought was, man, I'm so happy they won, you know, title while he is still with us, because, you know, everything great about LA and everything great about the Dodgers, it's been, you know, in the storytelling and falling asleep to him on the radio every night. Just, it's followed me my whole life all over the world, and just really appreciate it, guys. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you, Jason.
Thanks.
Here's Dan downtown. Hey, Dan, you're on ESPN LA. Hi. Dan, you there?
Hi, gentlemen.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks for having me. I just want to say thank you, Beto Durán, for being such an inspiration. Thank you, John Ireland, for being such an inspiration. And thank you, Vin Scully, for being such an inspiration for all young men. He was the total perfect example of how a young man should conduct himself.
Yeah, we lost him. It looked like he was in a civil defense thing there. Hey, here's Alan Oda, who writes a radio column and has taken the time to call in. We appreciate you doing that, Alan. Alan, I would imagine you met Vin more than once, right?
A couple times I got a chance to actually interview the man. And what was funny was that when I did the interview, I mean, I was shaking in my boots.
Sure.
I mean, I was so nervous. I was perspiring. In about 5 minutes, I felt I was talking to a friend. He was just so down to earth and just so humble. It was such a delight just to have both met the man and be able to, just to be able to chat with him. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, if you got a story, go for it.
Okay, so I got a quick story. So at the end of the interview, I mentioned that my parents were in great admiration of him because during Nomomania, once in a while he would talk to the Japanese broadcasters and he'd talk in Japanese. My parents are impressed by that. And I asked him about it. He says, well, we went to Japan in 1956 with the Dodgers. He got a little dictionary and decided to learn some words. He was still able to remember it yet 20, 30 years later. So went ahead, took my picture with him. And then as I left, he says, make sure you say hi to your parents for me. Right? We have our Sunday dinner with my parents. I mentioned just casually, oh, Vin Scully says hi to you. What? How do you meet Vin Scully? Right? Showed him the picture, right? For 15 minutes, I was the favorite son. After that, I went back to my brother. But for 15 minutes, I was
very good, Alan. Very good. Yeah, thank you for great. Taking the time to call in.
It was just a delight to meet the man. And yeah, I'm very sad, but at the same time, I celebrate. Just one of the most amazing people.
You know that, Alan? That's actually
amazing broadcaster, an amazing person.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point. Well, you know, we had him for 67 years. It's hard to say we didn't take full advantage of him.
We got the most out of it, and he got the most out of it, right? It's funny to hear him tell that story about how he read some words out of an English-Japanese dictionary back in the 50s, and he's able to pull these words out years later. That it's one thing to have just this massive information at your fingertips. It's another way to be able to integrate it so seamlessly, like you're talking about, Beto, with the pronunciation of certain names and certain places, and do it authentically and not sound like you're trying to shoehorn it in. That he was just able to connect with people, Japanese people, Mexican people, people,
Italians, the Pope.
It didn't matter. it didn't matter that wherever you were coming from, he made you feel incredibly comfortable and welcome.
You know what I noticed about him, though? Once again, watch it from a distance. This is one of, I've never taken pictures with people, and I never would, but I got a picture from my son's mother who sent me a, hey, remember when we took a picture with Vin? I'm like, no. Like, my son was probably 4, my daughter was just a newborn, and my sister's also in the picture. Like, he's in the outside of the Vin Scully press box, came and made sure to take a picture with the kids. He's like, oh, you're not in the picture? I took the picture. My dumb self should have been in the damn picture. But like, I don't have anything there. But it's just those kind of moments where he made everybody. That's the thing. John, you've been around a lot of people who have an aura and a presence, right?
Yeah, like nothing like him, though.
Magic has it. But Vin had that debonair, regal presence where almost he's floating.
Well, it's funny you say that, Beto, because John, he was 94 years old, so he is from a different era, right? And an era that was a little bit more formal than we're in right now, but he was of his time, but not out of place in this time.
His suits were always on point.
He was perfectly comfortable in this century.
There's a cool picture from him in Vero Beach where he has a Ferragamo belt and Gucci loafers and always on point. And his outfits were always, right? Always on point, no matter what. It was just never, it never felt like there was somebody who was like, okay, time to go. Like, you know, Harry Carey at the end was like, hey, Harry, like, put the Budweiser down.
Hey, look, you're on it, right? That there is a time for a lot of people. It's like, okay, that's enough. It's never.
I would listen to him when the game was 11-0, just so I could hear the stories. Here's Wayne in West Covina. Hey, Wayne, you're on ESPN LA.
Thank you, and a very pleasant good evening to both to all of you.
Well, appropriate phrase tonight.
I'm going to be 70, and I've been listening to Vin Scully since 1966 when I started following baseball. And as a guy who has no vision, I'm telling you, he was absolutely great.
Wayne has called our station before, and Wayne, I took it as the highest compliment that anyone's given me when you told me that you were able to follow the Laker games when Michael and I called them. But I would I would imagine we were very much competing for second place. I think Vin was as good of a storyteller as we've ever had, not just in sports, but in like news. I mean, he could have hosted 60 Minutes if he wanted to.
Well, John, it's funny.
Wayne, thank you for the call. I hope you're doing well.
We're talking about Wayne.
Thank you. Thanks very much. You know, I almost met him once, but it couldn't be. I gave a nurse in the Dodger Stadium infirmary, I told her that I was a broadcast student, which I was at Los Angeles City College at the time, and she wrote a letter to the press box, and Benny told me to try and come up to the press box after the game. So I go back to my seat, I'm on cloud 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. I'm going to meet Vin Scully. All of a sudden, I realize I can't do it. I have to take the bus home.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Life got in the way.
That's right.
Thank you, Wayne.
Appreciate that. There's, I believe it was on Bob Costas's old show, maybe it was his HBO show or later, where he was interviewing Ray Charles. And it turns out that Ray Charles really loved baseball, right? And Costas asked him the question, how did you ever, you know, find that you loved baseball? He goes, Vin Scully. That Vin Scully made the, like you were talking, John, it made him, the game come alive, that even though he couldn't see it, he could see it because of the way that Scully would describe the action.
A lot of players would always say is it wasn't officially until Vin said your name on a broadcast.
Sure.
I think Kevin Pillar recently said that, like, I get to play for the Dodgers. That's where Vin Scully would broadcast on stuff like that. A good friend of mine, Cesar Ramos, pitched at Long Beach State, played a little bit in the major leagues, Angels and Rays, but he was in spring training his final year with the Dodgers, freeway series, and he comes in to pitch. Oh, here's Cesar Ramos from El Rancho High and Pico Rivera, and his parents are watching at home, and Cesar, not big on social media. Vin Scully said my name on the broadcast tonight. Just how many players, and at his final season too, so many players would go up to see him in the broadcast booth, and it was just cool to see it. But back to the caller, I think it was Wayne, at the end where Vin would get out of the broadcast, and he would say goodbye, and then immediately go to the elevator, and it was waiting for him. And if the game ended right at time, you can be in the same elevator as Vin, where they would take the media down low, and then they would take Vin to where he had to be at. I could have easily took the escalator down and been in the clubhouse first, or I can wait another 5 minutes.
Yeah,
to go with
Vin. Gotta do it.
And then
Vin
would always talk to one of the old school AP writers. Well, we had that game. Vin would take his jabs too. Don't trip people. Vin would let you know when it was a 4-hour game.
He was born in 1927. Yes. You've heard all that stuff about the 27 Yankees, yeah. Ruth, Gehrig, all those dudes. Vin was born in 27. Here's Robert on line 4. Hey, Robert, you're on ESPN LA. Hi.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good,
Thank
sir.
You guys for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually had the opportunity to meet Vin Scully one time back in 2016, so his final year with the Dodgers. He came to a company that I was working for at the time and did a speaking engagement, and he was only scheduled to speak about maybe 45 minutes to an hour. Got there 2 hours early to meet all of us and signed whatever we wanted, and still stood an hour after to talk to us each individually one-on-one. So I always, you know, here in my house, I have a nice picture framed with him and a nice baseball.
That's great, so, Robert. Thank you for taking the time to call in.
It's funny
appreciate your memories.
To Robert, guys, that and Robert is just one of many people that I feel like this. Him meeting them, him taking a picture, him signing whatever. It's just they remember forever. And this is what he, I think, to your point, John, earlier, he was fully aware of the impact he had on people. He didn't take it for granted, but it was just this understanding that this is something that they're going to remember for a very long time. And he took the time to do it. Not everybody does.
I remember my statistician for the Laker games is the great Doug Mann, who's been a statistician for 40 years in Los Angeles. And for many years, he was working with Vin. And Greg and I may try and get Doug to come on the Mason and Ireland show tomorrow. one day I'm doing a Laker game and we're in a timeout and he sits right next to me, to my right. He's slipping me notes during the game all the time. And I look down on his phone. You know, you can see somebody else's phone. And it says Vin Scully.
That's a flex. That's a flex.
And he looks at me and I look at him. I went, if you don't answer that, you're a bigger idiot than I thought, man. And he goes, thanks. And he answered it. And Doug was great. Doug goes, hey, Vin, I'm in the middle of a game. Can I call you after? He's like, yeah. I go, Doug, don't talk to me as long as you want.
Leave Ireland there.
I don't care.
Yeah,
you know?
Both free throws good.
And Doug's talking to Vin Scully.
That's incredible.
Here's Mark in Huntington Park. Hey, Mark, you're on ESPN LA. Hi.
Yeah, man. So we got to celebrate life, and it's a great honor to have Vin Scully in the greats. And like I said, I always appreciate you, Ireland, for the last couple of years calling games. And look at the Fountain of Youth here in L.A. now, right? You got Joe Davis, the young kid from the Clipper Raider announcer.
Yeah, Noah Eagle. He's really good.
And then the Fountain of Youth, man, it's just going to live up here in L.A. It's going to be exciting times, and it's just going to celebrate, but we got to look at the Fountain of Youth, and the next couple of years, L.A. is going to be all right, man.
Well, make no mistake, and thanks for the call, Mark. All of us Billy Mack and me and Joe Davis and Alex Faust at the Kings and Noah, we're all walking on the road that Vin paved. He's the one that made radio here.
Everybody is, even cool. The Hall of Famers. If you guys do yourself a favor. Go to YouTube and type in John Miller, Vin Scully. John Miller, legendary Hall of Fame broadcaster for the Giants. He does a Vin Scully impersonation. And as he said, we all start off as baseball broadcasters trying to sound like Vin because everybody heard him.
Everybody heard him, and everybody tries to do it until you realize, I can't do that.
But you don't know you're doing it.
You're trying it, and it's like, this doesn't work for
me. Well, it's like that story I talked about when I called the end of the Laker game, when they won the title. It's like, where did I get that? I got it from Vin.
You know, how many of us teaching us when you didn't even know? Reason, right?
Well, every day, two and two, two outs, deuces wild. Every time, it's just those little things that kind of worm their way in your head.
John, I learned this from you, too. I didn't know that across the country that there's homers. Because when you grow up in L.A., Chick lets you know the team sucked. Vin lets you know his team was bad. Bob Miller and even Dick Enberg back in his day, they were straight to the point. I didn't know that a homer existed until I heard of Steve Stone with the Cubs or whatever later on. But because they were
Hawk Harrelson. Right. Put it on the board.
Because they were so down the middle neutral with it. So when Vin was doing an NBC game of the week or the playoffs, it didn't sound like
you wonder if that's a function of the time, right? Where he would be doing national games on Saturdays, and then he's back with the Dodgers for a period of time. He's back in national, and he's kind of always having to walk the middle of the road. But as a Dodger fan, you always felt like he was on your side. Yeah. But to your point, Beto, it always felt like you were getting the straight stuff.
Like you were getting the
best. He would have great stories about the other team.
Yes.
Here's
the
Mark.
Umpire stories.
Yeah, here's Mark in Beverly Hills. Hey, Mark, you're on ESPN LA. Hi.
Hey, John. My dad produced Vin's talk show for NBC in 1969 and his game show for NBC in 1971.
What was the game show?
It's called It Takes Two.
No kidding.
I had no idea.
I didn't either.
Details.
On the network had it at 12 o'clock in L.A., 1 o'clock on the East Coast. They shot it at Burbank, and I met him on numerous occasions, obviously with my dad. And as a 16-year-old kid, he was the nicest guy, just absolutely down to earth. But what I really wanted to say is the first time people ever heard Vin Scully's voice here in Los Angeles was right here on this frequency.
No kidding.
The first spring training game the Dodgers did in 1958 on 710.
Didn't know.
They were the Dodger Station from 58 and 59. The Cowboy and O'Malley were friends, and that's why they were here. Then when the Angels came, obviously the Dodgers went over to KFI for 17 years.
Yeah. I never knew that. I never knew he was on 710. Mark,
I didn't
thank
know
you.
He had a game show.
Yeah.
I mean, if there
Mark,
was
that's
ever,
great stuff, man. Thank you for all that.
If there was ever a use for YouTube, somebody's got to find that and put up some old Vin Scully game shows on YouTube. Did you know that,
no.
John?
No. I never knew he hosted a game show.
I didn't know he had a talk show either.
You know, he also had a great sense of humor. The Southern California sports broadcasters give out awards every year. And so one year.
Mason doesn't win.
Yeah. So one year, I'm up for like basketball play-by-play and on the radio. I'm up for radio play-by-play, and the category before me is TV play-by-play. And so they read the nominees, and the winner is Vin Scully, and he's sitting 5 feet from me. And he gets up and he
went to the awards?
He went this year. And he gets up and he says, room's packed. There's like 500 people in the room. And he gets up and he says, thank you for standing ovation. People can go crazy. He goes, every year I get my ballot for the Southern California sportscasters and I look at all of the great and talented names on this list. And then I vote for myself. And he sits down. And then Bob Miller gets up and goes, okay, our next awards radio play, and the winner is John Ireland. And I get up and go, if you think I'm following that, you're crazy. And I sat down. I mean, he's such a great guy.
That's terrific.
Here's Dan in Arcadia.
Hey, no kidding.
Hey, Dan. You're on ESPN LA.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just hope you find the highlight of Roy Campanella night, 1959, which was on 710 KMPC, and they made a highlight record of that season. And his description of the ceremony during Roy Campanella night is priceless.
Okay, well,
hardly ever played.
Thank you for that, Dan. We'll look for it.
We'll
Thanks.
Look for Campanella here in a minute, but we found It Takes Two. Is it on YouTube, Chris? Is that where we found it? Here it is, Vin Scully's game show, It Takes Two on NBC.
This morning, she boarded a train and traveled all the way from Petticoat Junction. Meredith McCray.
I'm usually sitting here with my husband, Greg Mullavy, but I have a wonderful, wonderful substitute today, my father, Gordon McCray.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Mercy.
He once went under the name of Guido Panzini, but we all know him and love him. A good golfer, too, Mr. Pat Harrington.
Schneider.
Thanks, Vinny. And I'm sitting here next to my lovely wife, Mrs. Greg Mullavy.
The next introduction was written by Pat Harrington. This gentleman once gave the same performance for 5 weeks running. He wouldn't dare give it standing still. Gary Crosby.
Wow. So it was like just a newlywed game kind of thing.
Vin's got jokes, like you said.
Yeah.
Little one-liners after you.
Wow. What? Yeah, I'm sure tomorrow is going to be like everybody's going to pull out of the archives anything they can find.
That's so cool.
Well, you know there's going to be, I mean, maybe not more game shows, but you know he did it for 70 years. Well, I'm sure there's a million things that we didn't know about that all of a sudden you're going to find, whether it's a game show, a talk show, a call from a game that, you know, we'd forgotten. Because we were talking right out of the chute. We did Gibson. We did Hank Aaron. We've done all of these different things along the way, and we've barely scratched the surface of his
calls.
Well,
how about this? Okay, so you remember the Red Sox have gotten over their curse. They went 86 years without winning a World Series. But they, in 1986, they had it.
Oh,
all right?
Yeah, I remember.
They had the Mets. And all they needed to do was get through the last inning, and they couldn't do it. And here's a very famous call from Vin involving former Dodger Bill Buckner.
5-5 in a delirious 10th inning. Can you believe this ball game at Shea?
Oh, brother.
3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first. Behind the bag. It gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight. If one picture is worth 1,000 words, you have seen about 1,000,000 words. But more than that, you have seen an absolutely bizarre finish to Game 6 of the 1986 World Series. The Mets are not only alive, they are well.
I mean, come on. They're just nobody better. Nobody better than
you. You know what I learned also as a kid in elementary here in Carson, California? Show tunes.
Yeah. No, he liked a song and dance, a theater guy. Yeah,
the
for
theater
sure.
And show tunes and Broadway and all that other stuff. I'm like, what are you talking about? But it made sense as I got older.
So by the way, we mentioned in 2016, it was his last year, The city council voted to rename Elysian Park Avenue Vin Scully Avenue. Oh, yeah. There was a Vin Scully Day. Eric Garcetti presented Scully with the key to the city. That was the year he got the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He had such a long and fruitful life. I'm just glad we got him for as long as we got him.
We got the over, right? Yeah. You got the over.
We got a lot
for
of,
sure.
We got a lot got of bonus a lot time. Of it.
And this is something that I don't think anybody thought anybody was going to call, Vin Scully or anybody else, a no-hitter in Coors Field. Here's Hideo Nomo throwing a no-no against the Rockies. That's back in 1996, September 17th. Mm-hmm. And you know what's so great? Like, there's the very eloquent calls. In the year of the improbable, the impossible has happened. And then that one, got him. Just absolutely short, sweet, right to the point. He could go, you know, poetic, and he could just go right to the point like that. Just so many different shots he had in his bag, and all of them awesome.
Now, here's Ray in Riverside. Hey, Ray, you're on ESPN LA. Hi.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
I wanted to say some memories when I was a kid. My dad always used to take me and my great-great-grandfather, and he had Alzheimer's, and he would always – my dad would take him. He had his little headset on, and my dad would put the game on for him. And we'd have the radio on as well, listening a bit and everything, watching the game there at the ballpark. And my grandpa would click in every now and then, and he'd look over at my dad and say, Chow Howard, because that's what he called him, and said, there's been Scully up there. And my dad says, yeah, Grandpa, that's him. And he said, he's the greatest. And then he would, like, click off. And he'd be gone again. And he'd be like, where are we at? Asking my dad. It was just – but those memories of going to the ballpark with my dad and my great-grandpa, those are something I'll never forget.
All right. Thank you, Ray, for the phone call.
Appreciate
it,
Ray.
I'm in a text chain with all the Laker announcers and behind-the-scenes guys, all the people in our truck. And I just got this from Stu Lance. Hmm. He was one that will never be seen again. He did the baseball schedule for 67 years. God bless him. Stu's right. Stu and I, we have a grind. We have an 82-game schedule. We know, you know, if we do six in the preseason and then we do the playoffs, we might do 110 games.
Mm-hmm.
Vin did 162-plus playoffs every year for 67 years. I mean, that's insane.
And national games.
Yeah, just insane.
Don't call a football game.
And I know towards the end they let him dial back a little, but still, that schedule, like, I'm telling you, I'm exhausted after 82. What's 162 going to do to you?
John, when you're 80. How old are you, 50-something?
59, just turned 59.
Okay, 59. You got another 30 years in you?
No, sir.
I mean, that's what we're talking about,
John was done
right?
5 years ago.
You're talking about 30 more years, and you've been doing it for a long time. 30 more years of living that life.
But
that
he was
talking
doing
about.
It by himself, too. The last years where he would do the simulcast the first three innings. Tell me if you're on the radio in L.A., you're listening to that, and you're like, wow, he's painting a picture for radio and TV, yet you can't tell which one he's doing.
And they're very different, except for when he was doing it. When somebody's doing it on TV, it's for TV. When somebody's doing it on the radio, it's for the radio. When he would do the simulcast battle, you're right. You could listen to, you're watching on TV, it didn't feel like a radio
and
broadcast.
Also,
and
how
vice
many times
versa.
Have we listened to a baseball game all over the country, and a guy is complaining about, oh, this is too long. Vin sounded like he wanted to be there every single inning, every single out. Like he was didn't want to be anywhere else in the world.
Well, you know, Beto, that is the one thing. When I talked to young broadcasters, I said the skill you want to try and have is the great announcers, and Vin was a great example of this, maybe the best example ever. It always sounds like there's no place they'd rather be than where they are.
Yeah.
You know, you're just jealous. It's natural. You know, Bob Miller had it. Enberg had it. Chick had it. Vin had it. We've been so spoiled in Los Angeles. You know, if you grow up in different parts of the country, in Detroit, they had Ernie Harwell. In St. Louis, they had Jack Buck. We
had
got Vin Scully
had
for 67 years. Do you know how lucky we were? I mean, it is. There's going to be a lot of sad people tonight. And there's going to be a lot of sad people tomorrow when we do a lot of shows. Mason and I are going to be at Rams camp tomorrow. I guarantee you.
All the Rams guys will have thoughts on it for sure. Yeah. It's It doesn't happen often. I know that there's celebrity, and when somebody famous passes, you have like, oh, I like their movies or their books, mm-hmm. or whatever it might be, and it's one of those, that's too bad. This is different. This is yeah. far more personal.
Usually when somebody dies, I'm that guy who says, you know what, don't put your picture of them on social media. Oh, yeah. you met him, or oh, that RIP, you never met him. This yeah. You know what? Today, post everything you want, because you may have never met him, but he met you.
So we've played a lot of really good calls so far. We have a lot more coming up in just a little bit, too. We're going to hear some more great World Series calls, just celebrating the incredible life and career of Vin Scully. We're back with more on 710 ESPN in just a couple of minutes.